ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Yesterday, the name Satya Parakrama was discussed. This can be discussed in more ways also. He is truly a hero. No one else is a real hero. No one else can save. A hero means one who performs outstanding, valorous activities to protect the good people from the bad people, or to protect people from a dangerous situation. So, only Krishna can really help us. There are national heroes, sports heroes, but this cannot actually help us. The whole conception of being a hero outside of Krishna consciousness is all nonsense. The idea that we can be, that we're suffering in this world of birth and death, and somehow we can be helped without getting out of that situation. In other words, the example is often given of a prison house. So if we're in the prison house, we're meant to be punished. So the real hero is someone who helps us to get out of this prison house, or takes us out of the prison house. If someone is suffering, every day I'm being beaten by iron rods, and someone comes and says, "Don't worry, I'll save you from that." And then from the next day, no more iron rod beating, but he's beaten with golden rods. And he said, "Now I'm in a much better situation. This is more prestigious, being beaten with golden rods." But it's the same business. So in this material world, birth, death, old age and disease, if we're saved from birth, death, old age and disease as a worm in stool, and we're transferred to the body of the person who passed that stool, we might think that, well, that's a better situation. Better than being a worm in stool is to be a human that passes stool. But it's all stool. The whole material world is useless. So Krishna is the one who lifts us up. A hero means one who's above the rest. He's got physical abilities and the desire to sacrifice for the help of others. Now, Krishna, in one sense, he can't be a hero because there's really no danger for him. To be a hero, you have to take a risk. The soldiers get decorated with a medal for bravery. That means they take a great risk. Sometimes it's awarded posthumously. There are, of course, I was raised in Britain, so I don't know, but I know they have there the Victoria Cross is considered the highest award for bravery, and that's given to military personnel also. Military personnel only. So those who exhibit great bravery, just like, for instance, there was one pilot in the Second World War, New Zealander, who he came across in the seas, a German submarine that was above the surface. So he went right above the submarine and dropped all his bombs, which sunk the submarine. But the only way he could be that accurate to sink the submarine was to go so close that he himself would get shot down. So he died. But he sunk the submarine. And the captain of the German submarine crew, most of them were rescued because people had a little more decency in those days. They just didn't kill every man, woman, and child in the opposition. So they rescued them. And the some other British plane rescued them. And the captain of the German submarine, he said that the pilot should be, even though he's dead, he should be given the highest military orders for his bravery. He gave his life to sink a German submarine, which the German submarines were sinking ships, making a block. So that's just an example. It's a great act of bravery, but in the ultimate picture, it was all useless. Because it didn't really help anyone. There's this illusion that we're helping our country. It's true in one sense. Just like in 1971, when Srila Prabhupada was in Delhi, and the Pakistani troops were coming over the border and attacking. And the journalists asked Prabhupada that, well, you're a sadhu, should we fight or not? Because at that time, still, Mahatma Gandhi's influence is very strong, the whole idea of ahimsa. Prabhupada said, of course you should fight. Go and, you know, fight and kill them all. He didn't say, no, no, we should all be very peaceful. He said, yeah, fight. So, it is required at a vyavaharic level, at a practical level. But it's of no ultimate value, just like so many people gave their lives for Indian independence. But there's no ultimate value if the India goes on the same materialistic course that the British were advocating. So they're politically free, ideologically slaves. Srila Prabhupada said that after independence, India should have made Bhagavad Gita as it is, the state religion. He didn't say that Islam and other religions should be stopped, but he said the government should have, and he often said that the Indian government should have supported his preaching all over the world. He said that Sanskrit should have been made the national language of India. Unfortunately, no one listened to him. And still they're not listening to him. Anyway, the point here is that the real hero is one who can help us in the ultimate manner. And that is Krishna, who works through his representatives also. So we can say, Srila Prabhupada is a great hero. He came alone, with no friends. Of course, he had the best friend, Krishna, but no human friends with him, no money. Well, he had 40 rupees, but you can't use that in America anyway. So he came with great risks and he established Krishna consciousness valiantly. Now, it may be said that Krishna can't be a hero because for him everything's easy anyway. For him to kill all the soldiers, I mean, he can just die. And just, they could all be dead. He doesn't have to fight. But he himself takes a role for his own pleasure in which he feels that he has a good fight. Just like it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, that after Varaha Dev killed Hiranyaksha, that Varaha Dev felt, that was a good fight. That was a tough one. And he praised Hiranyaksha. Good fighter. Wouldn't like to have too many of them. If fighting me. You never know the next time. Because in a fight, you see, if it's evenly matched, it could go either way. So Krishna feels like that. He plays as the hero. Otherwise, what's the fun? If this is the whole principle of Leela, that it's very difficult for non-Hindus to understand. I'm using the word Hindu in a very broad sense, but for Indians, it's very easy for Hindus, yeah, and Indians, I guess, because Muslims and Christians in this country, and Jains and Parsis and Sikhs and atheists and whatever, Buddhists, whatever else you have, they're exposed to the whole culture. So the idea that God comes among us and moves among us as an ordinary person, as if an ordinary person, is quite acceptable within the Hindu understanding. But for Christians and Muslims, it's just like they can't understand it at all. It's just, you know, God's up there. It's just like, it's so far up. And all we can do is bow down and ask for some bread and some beer as well. If you've got a little extra mercy, we could use some beer also. So there wouldn't be any fun in Vrindavan Leela if Krishna was all the time showing his universal form and, you know, walking around like a prince and everyone bowing down to him. In fact, when Krishna comes back from the pasturing ground every evening at sunset, I told this one many times because I think it's good fun to tell, then all the demigods come and pray to Krishna. Brahma, Indra, Shiva, and they're all offering prayers. And all the cowherd boys see this, and they also come before Krishna and offer prayers, but just in jest. Oh, Krishna, you are so... Ah! They think it's a big joke. He's just after... Come on, these stupid demigods, they're praying to him. I defeated him in wrestling today, and he had to carry him on my back. They think he's God. They're stupid demigods. What do they know? They don't know anything. They got the wrong person. They set their... what do you call that? They use it in the West for finding your direction. You put it in your car. GSB or something. They said it wrong. It should have been on me. Every day I defeat him in wrestling. So Krishna actually shows himself to be a hero by performing heroic deeds. Otherwise, how could he attract the young girls of Vrindavan if he was just some, you know, little kid with no special quality about him? He has to, you know, when the demons come, he has to tie up his sash, make sure he looks right, and then he goes to fight with them. So even before, when the demon comes, like Keshi, before he fights, first of all, he makes sure he looks good, because he knows that all the gopis are going to be watching very carefully. Then he goes and kills the demons. So Krishna is very self-conscious. He's a hero of truth. He establishes the truth. He's not a hero of untruth. Actually, all these heroes, just like I just narrated an anecdote about a New Zealander. But like everything else, everyone in material consciousness always does, whatever they do, it simply serves to bolster the illusion that everyone is in. And that's a complaint against mundane welfare workers also. That they appear to be great heroes of social service. They're doing such wonderful work, feeding the poor, But this simply reinforces the illusion, several illusions. One illusion is that to be poor is very bad, whereas actually, from the Krishna conscious point of view, it's probably an advantage. Dinere adhik daya kare Bhagavan, kulin pandit dhani bara abhiman. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that those who are considered very low in human society, they get the mercy of Krishna more, because those who are puffed up, those who are born in high families, those who are very learned, and those who are very wealthy, they also tend to be very egoistic, and therefore they don't get the mercy of, they're not eligible to get the mercy of Krishna, because they don't want it. They what do I need? What do I need? What do I need God for? I don't need God. So, the mundane welfare workers, they reinforce the idea that this world is a place that we all have to enjoy in, so let us be good and help others also to enjoy within it. So the great heroes like Mother Teresa, they're all just reinforcing illusion, that's all. And even she is, I mean, she's advertised as a great hero, but there are plenty of people in India at the same time who are doing welfare work, even if you, on a same level, but somehow or other she got promoted. So, the real welfare worker at that day, who was present in the world at the time, was Srila Prabhupada. I mean, I don't have anything personally against Mother Teresa, but speaking from the Krishna conscious point of view, which is the real point of view, she's not even eligible to be a speck of dust at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. Her contribution is zero compared to what Srila Prabhupada did. One word that Srila Prabhupada speaks is more valuable than all her leper colonies and whatever else, because it's all just within the world of illusion, that's all. So, I'm not saying you shouldn't, that lepers, they shouldn't have some kind of social help extended to them. But it shouldn't be advertised like it's the greatest thing in the world to help some lepers, that's all. So, Satya Parakrama can also mean that he is the dynamic truth. The truth is not simply some vague concept, as the Nirvisheshavadis would have us believe. The truth is dynamic. The truth is full of qualities. The truth is intense. The truth is Krishna. Krishna is the truth. So, name 215 is Nimisha. Nimisha, which means ones whose eyes are closed. So, you can close your eyes, but that won't make you Bhagavan. You have to have all the other qualities also. It's not simply by having eyes closed that you become Bhagavan. But in certain manner, just like I said, Satya is a name which is applicable in every avatar, every circumstance, every moment, everything he does. But some of the names, they apply to forms of the Lord, certain forms of the Lord, or certain pastimes of the Lord, just like the name Ravanari, a name of Lord Rama, means the enemy of Ravana. So that doesn't refer to him in his childhood. His enmity toward Ravana, that comes later. So it's a name specifically of Lord Rama. It's not a name of Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha. It's a name particularly of Rama and of one phase of his Leela. Similarly, there are many names of Krishna, Bakasura, Aghasura, Aghavit, Kangsari, Keshi Nisudan, Madhusudan, which refer to his killing specific demons. And then those names stick, just like Krishna's. In Bhagavad Gita, we find Arjuna calls Krishna Madhusudana, even though he killed the Madhu demon way, way, way back, a long time back, not even in this form, not previously as Mahavishnu. Similarly, we find a common name of Krishna is Murari, although the Mura demon who he killed, it's not a very, the demon and the pastime of him killing the Mura demon is not very prominent, but somehow that name Murari is quite prominent. I didn't find out why. So this name Nimisha means whose eyes are closed. So that can refer to Narayan Rishi, who's in meditation, Buddha Deva. It can refer to the in a general term to the fact that he doesn't like to see the non-devotees, and specifically he doesn't like to see those who are envious of his devotees. So he closes his eyes. He doesn't like to. He pretends he doesn't see them. Doesn't like to see them. His kripa kataksha, his glance of mercy, does not fall on those who are envious of his devotees. He reserves his merciful glance for the devotees. Also, when in his yoga nidra, Mahavishnu, he lies asleep, his eyes are closed. Or another meaning is that even if his eyes are closed, he still sees everything. Because, what does the scientist say about that? Oh, I recently read something like the optical nerves were linked up to the tongue or something like that, and people could see through their tongue. Funny things these scientists do. So, he is Angana Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti Pashanti Panti Kalayanti Chiranjagant. He sees, touches, feels, smells, hears, and tastes. But it's not that he's dependent on the organs which are connected with those functions to do so. So that's another point to understand about the name Nimisha. All right, now the next name is Animisha, one whose eyes are not closed. Whoops. It's given the same meaning. Again. Oh yeah, these names are names of Matsya Avatar. So the fish, his eyes are open. Naimisha Nimisha Kshetre, that's there, the fourth verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Naimisha, at Naimisharanya, at Animisha Kshetra. Naimisharanya is known as Animisha Kshetra, the place of the Supreme Lord, whose eyes are not closed. He's always seeing everything. So these are the kind of things which drive the logicians crazy. His eyes are always closed, his eyes are always open, both at the same time. So, drives the logicians crazy, and the devotees are very happy to hear it. How? Ah, yes. Yes, his eyes are always closed. Yes, how wonderful is Bhagavan? His eyes are always closed. And his eyes are never closed. Yes, his eyes are never closed. How wonderful is Bhagavan? So both things are true. Explain it logically? No. I don't know how to explain it logically. I don't feel a need to explain it logically. Just like that, that's all. Throw your logic book out and bow down at the lotus feet of Krishna, and you'll be okay. So, well, actually, they've given both of the names as having the same explanation, one whose eyes are closed, but in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains Anyamisha as one whose eyes are never closed. So, most likely, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but most likely these names can be said in both ways. And especially if it's spoken, then it could be the same name twice, because the how you break up the word. He doesn't miss anything. He's watching us all the time. Watch out, folks. Be careful what you do. There's someone watching you. He knows everything that we're doing. Now, Shankara gives the meaning that he is ever awake and watchful, and he sees everything because of his wisdom. It's okay. It's the kind of name that a Jnani would give. One thought appeared in my mind, that his eyes are ever open because he's always looking at or for Radha. So he's not going to close his eyes. The gopis, they criticize Brahma, that he's not a very good creator. He didn't study well enough at school in the engineering course, because he made these eyes that blink. We want to see Krishna, but we blink. And when we blink, we feel we're going to die, because at that time we can't see Krishna. But Krishna, he doesn't have to blink. So his eyes are always on Radha. And although she has to be shy, he doesn't, because he's shameless. So he doesn't bother pretending that he's not interested. So like this, we have the name Nimisha, Anyamisha. And we'll find that all the commentators, they don't attempt to resolve the contradiction. It's only when we go to school and get a Western-style education that we start thinking, well, how can that be? His eyes are always closed and they're never closed. Doesn't make any sense. That's what you get from having a modern education. But the previous commentators, they don't even discuss, or they don't feel the need. No one felt the need to explain or to try to explain that how these two contradictory factors are there in the Supreme Lord. Of course, elsewhere, different acharyas have explained that, or they have discussed that, how he is all-pervasive and localized also, how in his lila he becomes subservient to his apparent superiors, although he is superior to everyone, and so on, how He is the kindest, but he kills the demons. He's the most merciful, he kills the demons. So all these apparent contradictions, for the sake of the atheists or the doubters, the acharyas may explain. But Vishnu Sahasranama, that's mostly devotees will read that. The Vishnu Sahasranam does not of itself expound any philosophical principles, although philosophical, and it may be philosophically explained. It's simply a list of names, that's all. So devotees, they can listen to that and be very happy, and especially happy. For although these apparent contradictions, they cause the atheist to become more atheistic and say, is he, what is this stupid thing? How can it be? How can it be like that? It can't be like that. So Shastra is very expertly presented that everyone will get that what they want. The devotees will be very happy to hear the glorification of the Supreme Lord and to take pleasure in hearing of how he is apparently contradictory. He's all-encompassing. Everything is possible in Krishna. And the non-devotees, they think, that's stupid. These stupid people are talking all nonsense. What is this nonsense? Eyes open all the time, eyes closed all the time. But for the devotees, it's not a philosophical issue. It's another chance to exult in the transcendental characteristics of Narayana, understanding that we can't be like that because we're limited. And he is like that. That's just another example of his being constitutionally superior to us in all respects. So devotees are very happy to hear that. Whereas non-devotees, they don't like to hear this. This whole discussion we were having yesterday with the proxy atheist. Actually, as Prangaranga Prabhu said, it's very easy to understand. What was it you said about the that Krishna is supreme, we are his servant, we should be humble? You said like that. To accept Krishna as the supreme, it's very easy to understand. But that's because you're a devotee, it's easy to understand. But for the non-devotee, the reason that they bring up all these arguments and it seems to them quite clear that there's no God is because they have an envious mentality. That's all. Otherwise, you can make arguments, and I think Keshavanand did a pretty good job of making stupid arguments. I mean, they are, after all, stupid. I'm not saying he's stupid, but it's like artificial intelligence. It's artificial. It's not on the real point. This is artificial. The atheist's intelligence, you could say, there already is artificial intelligence. Your intelligence is artificial. It's not real. It's just a parody of the real intelligence, which should recognize that we are tiny beings controlled by the supreme power. But it seems clear to them and logical to them and obvious to them that there is no God. There is no God in control because we don't see him, which is Dr. Frog's philosophy. So what was I going to say about that? There's something else. Yeah, but it went out of my mind. So, Hare Krishna.